The defection of 1957 was made possible by a new form of finance, originally dubbed adventure capital. The idea was to back technologists who were too dicey and penurious to get a conventional bank loan, but who promised the chance of a resounding payoff to investors with a taste for audacious invention. The funding of the Traitorous Eight and their company, Fairchild Semiconductor, was arguably the first such adventure to take place on the West Coast, and it changed the history of the region. After Fairchild got its $1.4 million in financing, it became evident that any team in the Valley possessed of grand ideas and stiff ambition could spin itself out, start itself up, and generally invent the organizational form that best suited its fancy. Engineers, inventors, hustlers, and artistic dreamers could meet, combine, separate, compete, and simultaneously collaborate, all courtesy of this new finance. Adventure capital could sometimes be defection capital, or it could be team-building capital, or almost just experimental capital. But whichever way you looked at it, talent had been liberated. A revolution was afoot. The invention of this new liberation capital explained more than most people still realize. The rival theories of what established the Valley's preeminence, that it was home to Stanford University, that it benefited from military contracts, that it had a certain West Coast countercultural irreverence, have never been especially persuasive. After all, Stanford was no more distinguished than the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, which in turn was located a short drive from Harvard, creating a research cluster more powerful than anything that Silicon Valley could muster in its early days. Similarly, it was true that Stanford benefited from military research dollars, that film from U-2 spy planes was processed at the nearby NASA Ames Research Center, and that the Lockheed Missiles and Space Division built submarine-launched weapons at its campus in the Valley. But the famous military-industrial complex of the 1950s was primarily an East Coast alliance between the Pentagon and Cambridge, Massachusetts. The personification of that axis, Vannevar Bush, was dean of the MIT School of Engineering, founder of the Cambridge-based defense contractor Raytheon, and Franklin Roosevelt's top science administrator during World War II. Millions of dollars in federal funding flowed to the Pentagon-backed research centers around Boston. And by the end of the 1960s, more than 100 tech startups had spun out of these labs. If military ties had determined the location of applied science, in other words, Cambridge should have been the center of the universe. If neither Stanford nor defense contracts explain Silicon Valley's rise to preeminence, what of the theory that the region was distinguished by that West Coast counterculture, which freed people to imagine technologies as yet unborn? Doug Engelbart of the Augmented Human Intellect Research Center in Palo Alto, who conceived the early versions of the computer mouse and the graphical user interface, was involved in LSD experiments and hijacked Pentagon funding to explore the personal growth training method known as EST. The young Steve Jobs was similarly enthralled by Eastern mysticism. He went about barefoot, rinsed his feet in the company toilet, and maintained that his fruitarian diet rendered regular washing obsolete. The people who invented the 21st century were pot-smoking, sandal-wearing hippies from the West Coast like Steve, because they saw differently, observed Bono, the rock musician and friend of Steve Jobs's, and some version of this story is widely accepted in the Valley, whose denizens like to think of themselves as cool as well as rich and powerful. The hippies' anti-corporate vibe drove them to share ideas rather than run to the nearest patent lawyer, according to this narrative. Their egalitarianism ensured that they were open to any unkempt upstart who might see something, sense something. Something with the potential to change everything.